Welcome to Better Sex, where you get the information and inspiration to create and enjoy your best possible sex life. Join your host, sex therapist Jessa Zimmerman, as she brings you expert guests, helpful tips, knowledge, and strategies to improve your intimate relationships. And now, your host, Jessa Zimmerman.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Better Sex Podcast. This is Jessa, your host. And as always, I'm so glad you tuned in and decided to spend some time with me. Today, we're talking about one of my, I don't know if it's a favorite topic, but it's something that comes up in my sex therapy practice so much of the time, which is the importance of selfishness, you know, in a relationship in general, but especially in sex. And this is not maybe the way you think of selfishness. It's bad, it's negative, it's you at the expense of everyone else. It's not really what we're talking about. We're talking about how important it is to tune in to what you want and how you feel about things and what works for you and what doesn't. And it's about being able to take responsibility for those things and advocate for those things and set boundaries as necessary. And then, of course, welcoming your partner to do the same thing. It's basically what I call playing your own side of the court. You do your side, they do theirs, and then the relationship works better. So my guest today is Dr. Laura Dabney, and this is one of her favorite topics too. So we get to sit together and chat about the role of selfishness, how to develop that, some of the symptoms that couples are going to experience in their sex life and the relationship in general if someone is not coming from that place, hasn't developed that sort of strength of self. Anyway, it's a fascinating conversation, and I hope you enjoy it. And before we start the show today, it is sponsored by Intimacy with Ease. It's a method to help otherwise happy couples achieve a sex life that is easy and fun for both of them, so that you can actually just enjoy your sex life with zero stress. For more information, if you want to watch a brief little training video that's available, all of that, go to intimacywithease.com. Laura, thank you so much for being on the show with me.
Glad to be here.
I talk about selfishness a lot in my sex therapy practice, so I'm really excited to have this as a topic. And I want to start with people's perception that somehow selfishness is bad, right? Like there's such a connotation that we should never be selfish. So do we need a different word? Like, what are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, I sort of say it tongue in cheek, and I think people in my office end up getting kind of caught up in the word. Isn't it bad? But really, our point has been, you know, sometimes you have to do something for yourself because so many people get caught up in this idea. I don't know if it's exactly how they were raised or all the romance novels or whatever's being sort of promoted out there that if you give everything to somebody, they're going to love you in return or figure out what you need without you having to say it.
Yes.
So then they get very disappointed and resentful that they're quote unquote doing everything, but their partner's doing nothing. But it ends up going awry.
Yeah. So that sort of ties into what I think of as some of the myths around sex, you know, that it plays into this idea that we shouldn't have to be selfish. Like somebody should just know what we want if we're with the right person, right? Or that the whole way a relationship works is we give 100%, like everything, like it's a sacrifice or something like that.
Yeah,
exactly. Can you think of more? Are there more myths that relate to this that you see when you're working with people?
Giving gifts, doing chores, almost everything. There's people who either they're uncomfortable with their neediness, so they don't want to say, gee, I need some help in the kitchen. So instead, you know, and this is sort of semi-conscious, instead they do all the stuff in the kitchen, hoping that the partner will see or hoping that the partner will catch on that they need help. So this is a way to avoid saying they need anything because somehow a lot of people are uncomfortable with neediness. They think, there's a lot of people who think neediness makes them more vulnerable. And I have to keep reminding people, you're the same strength before you said you needed something than the 2 seconds after you said you needed something. It doesn't make you more vulnerable. Oh, but someone might say no. It's so much better than the people who can't read your mind.
Right, right. Well, another thing that occurs to me is people might do all these things hoping for something to be reciprocated, not just help. you know, right. But like, wow, if I take care of the kids and do all the dishes, then you're going to want to have sex with me later or something.
Oh, I see what you mean. Just a totally different, right?
Yeah, almost like a tit for tat, except it's unspoken still, you know?
Oh, I definitely see that. I do everything for her, yet she or he doesn't want to have sex or just too busy for me. Or I'll do everything. I'm doing all this work around the house, so you'll buy me a romantic dinner and we'll have some romance, you know?
Yeah.
Frustrating when people are avoiding something that's personal. I mean, that's what intimacy is being able to open up about what you need, want, desire, thinking. And they miss that very simple way of getting closer to somebody.
So how would you talk about selfishness, focus on self, being attuned to yourself, whatever it is, you know, how would you reframe this for people so they understand how healthy and really important that this is?
Well, I always start with showing them because it's very hard to just simply tell somebody because they really are ingrained or it's a truism in their mind that this is how you create good relationships. So I have to keep tying it in with them. So we have to stop and go over every time. Every session, and he comes in twice weekly, every session he tells me about his wife who's divorcing him and told him many times, I do not want you to contact me. She'll give him an order and then he starts to do it. you need to do this. You need to call a family meeting. You need to get her on the right track. And he starts to do it. So we have to stop. Okay, let's go back. Where in there, you know, what was that something for you? Was that something for her? I thought it would help her because then I thought the divorce would go better. Something like that. And we have to stop and go, well, so where are you in all that? Did you want to help her? Was it something you wanted to do? Was it something you could even do? What about her comment that she didn't want you to talk to her at all? What about the comment that she doesn't even want to be with you? So we have to just stop and keep pulling it apart. And then if we do that enough, they start seeing it themselves. You know, then it kind of going out on a limb and say, okay, let's try not doing that. So then they'll take the steps of simply saying, sorry, I can't do that. Or they'll start practicing. They'll practice in session about how to say no or how to put up a boundary or how to kindly remove yourself from something. And they have to start practicing. And then when they start doing that and realizing, oh gosh, the relationship, sometimes right back, okay, thanks. Or the relationship doesn't fall apart just because they said no or couldn't do it. It's a few steps.
So what are the consequences of not doing this, right? Of continuing to be selfless, giving, not putting yourself first ever, or not being in touch with what you need or want?
Well, a lot of times people come to me with, I always check this out with people who come with a great deal of resentment and they're sort of just on edge, very irritable a lot, or the people who suddenly explode and put holes in walls or have screaming matches about something small. I always suspect this is back there because they're putting so much burden on themselves and they're not tying in the fact that the resentment is coming from this ever giving and of course, people not picking up and giving in return. So they see it as very unbalanced. They're very resentful. They're blowing up in all these other places. And it is a confusion in the relationship. So the consequence is a lot of resentment, a very sense that everything's unfair and unbalanced. And really, it can destroy a relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I, when I'm thinking about how this relates to a couple's sex life.
Yeah.
Maybe, well, I'll just let you speak to that. How does this show up in terms of a couple's sexual dynamic? And what are the implications if they don't start to tune in and advocate for what they need?
Well, I've seen both sides where either the person giving, and we call, there's a term, pathological altruism, that I teach my patients a lot. So obviously pathological, bad giving. And people are always saying, what does that mean? I'm like, it means you're giving to the point where it's hurting you.
Yeah.
So either that person starts pulling away emotionally, sexually, physically, or the person who keeps getting blown up on or is dealing with this moody person and doesn't know why, they will sometimes start pulling away. But it's a very common dynamic that once that fantasy that I'm going to give and you're going to give back and you're not playing the game, once that's sort of in the air, like an elephant in the room, but definitely the intimacy, the romance, the flirting, the fun, the sex all starts to diminish. And it's rather sad to see.
Yeah. And, you know, and I'm thinking about my own clients, and some of them have bought the sort of fairy tale idea that you should know what I want. I don't need to know, you know, or you should read my mind, or I just give and give and give and you'll do the same thing or whatever. But I also think sometimes people, they're not in touch with themselves sexually. So they hope the other person will take over. You know what I mean?
So yeah, or either the self-esteem issue, or they're not comfortable. So they just want to, they're hoping that someone will take over or figure it out, or, you know, just sort of take control
of
the situation. And that's a little bit different issue when it's the self-esteem, but that's very common too, where they feel like, well, he's not going to listen to me, or she's not going to want to do what I want to do, or she's not interested in what I'm interested in. There's a lot of that. The couples I see who are like that, they've already been so far apart, like either they've got a lot of kids that they've been dealing with and did not make time for themselves. And so they've become strangers. And then that romance, intimacy, closeness, sexuality just goes with it. They're just like, you know, this going further apart from each other.
Yeah. And I think, you know, in some ways you've spoken to this, but I'm curious how you would maybe list out the components of being selfish in a healthy way. What are the building blocks that you're helping people develop?
I don't know if I put in blocks, but in terms of when we talk about it, we have to start talking about how doing things for yourself is, I mean, I hate to keep using that old phrase now, that putting your oxygen mask on first, if you're killing yourself and taking care of yourself, then you're going to have so much more to give. And you'll be ready when somebody asks you. You won't be gritting your teeth and on the edge of being overwhelmed when somebody asks you. I always say, you know, taking care of ourselves is our job as an adult. That's the definition of being an adult. You care for yourself. And that's really all you can do, because you're the only one you know inside and out. That's the other part of this whole pathological altruism and giving, and being selfless, is that you think you know what they want. That's part of it. It isn't just the hope that they're going to figure out what you want, but like, it's especially in sex. So you think, because of the sex, it's hard for people to talk about it. It's even more common, but you don't know what they want and need. You can think, you go, oh, I've known her for this, but we've been married this many years. I know exactly what she's going to say, right? I know exactly what he's going to do.
Yeah.
And I always challenge them. I say, okay, let's go. I'll take you on that challenge. I've been right 95% of the time, just FYI. So I have to help them see that they don't know. And if they're able to stick with you, and I say that a lot, let's stick with you first. Sometimes I'll even ask what went wrong, and they'll just tell me all from the viewpoint of the other person.
Yeah.
Well, come do this, and she was upset about that, and she was, okay, come back to you. Just use I to talk about your experience. Then we can fill in what you think her experience was. But the people who start doing that are just so much more. It's funny to see it happen, because when they start buying that and believing that, the confidence starts to build a little bit. Definitely they settle down in the anxiety and irritability. It's very rewarding, and they're almost shocked when it becomes, when they start seeing it come back at them, because they're more settled and calm and happier.
Yeah. At the same time that people need to be selfish, we also need to make room for our partner to be selfish, right? Like, we also do need to be some giving. So when does this get too much or unhealthy, or how would you sort of talk about that balance?
Yeah, then we start talking about instead of starting with her or him, start with you. What do you need? What do you want? A lot of people don't even give themselves the time to really think about that. It's really amazing. But you really need to sit and have some quiet time or some reflecting time to think, okay, what was that tension at lunch earlier today? What was going on with you? What was I thinking? What was happening with me? That whole thing. So once you do that, and then, so once you figure that out, then there are some options. One, only one option, is to present that to your partner. This is what I covered with going on with me at lunch, and why I think I snapped at you, and because this is what I actually needed. I wasn't able to say it. And then zip it. Then let her or him, let your partner say, I'm really interested in what you think or felt.
Yeah.
Either they'll say what they were feeling and thought, and that, so we're done, or, which is not good, because yes, you were selfish and said what you needed and wanted and everything. But then part of being in a relationship is to hear what they have to say. Don't say what you think they were feeling. Just say enough. Zip it, let them talk. And then, so we have these two experiences. What can we do to make this work for both of us? So it's the I, you, we, you know, triad.
Okay. And that same framework would apply around sex.
Definitely.
Do you usually advise people have these conversations sort of separate from the bedroom, away from sex itself, to start talking about, you know, like if a couple's been struggling with sex for a while and part of it is having been pathologically altruistic or giving or not in touch with, you know, what I actually want, I'm just showing up because you want it or something like that. Should they be talking about this over the kitchen table? Should they be talking about this only in a therapist's office? Can they talk like in the midst of sex? Like,
kind of depends where they're at. I'm sure you've seen this where they are sometimes so angry that we really, you know, you just, they're not, haven't had sex in maybe years and the rage or the unhappiness is so surface level. But then there's couples who come in, they're very, you know, they're really just have this one issue either in the bedroom or with just intimacy or closeness in general, and they're able to do it. So I just let, I try to figure that out first, what's best for them. But typically they're in a worse place. So I always advocate couples to have some protected time alone, preferably daily, but usually I get weekly, which is I'll take.
Yeah.
And because that's very, it's, they've got kids and busy lives. It's so common and they somehow don't think that's important. But that time is the time to bring up touchy subjects like, how's it going in the bedroom? And what about your disciplining little Johnny and like that? Or yeah, all those sets of topics, that a place, like a backup place if they can't do it in the bedroom, they try, or that's the place to start if they're afraid to try it in the bedroom.
Yeah. I love what you're saying too about if you, because I see this in my practice, if people come in, there's a lot of resentment or anger. It is such a clue that somebody's been doing something they haven't wanted to be doing, you know, or they haven't touched into their own reasons for doing it or something. It's coming from the selfless giving place instead of from choice.
Or they don't want to admit it, or they think it makes them strong, or on all, they've put all these wonderful adjectives to this, but they don't realize that it's just palpable sometimes their irritation. And
yeah,
it's important for you and me to explain what they're actually projecting or coming across as.
Yeah. So now I'm wondering if, let's say there's one partner in the couple who has struggled to be selfish, right? Has just been giving, isn't in touch with what they want. What's the benefit for their partner? If you're talking to their partner, of encouraging their partner to get selfish. Because I'm imagining some of them are like, oh, this has been working pretty well for me because they just give. But I actually think most of them would realize they're really well served by their partner starting to think about themselves.
It's funny because people come in and say, I give, and I just don't get any return. When the partner's actually there, they're like going, what?
Yeah.
they do not see it as they're giving because
right,
the person is missing the mark because they think they know what they're, you know, they're not even aware that the person is doing this.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's kind of funny for them. It's actually helpful for them to see that you're giving is not getting received as giving.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm so a little confused. What is the giving person say to the other person? Or?
Their giving person's partner. What would you say about why it's so important for their partner to learn to be selfish?
For the partner to be selfish.
Yeah. So let's say Jane has been giving, and Betty has, you know, as their partner. What would you say to Betty about why it's so important that Jane get to learn?
Oh, because, well, then we either talk about the resentment or all the things that are working. I actually did have one person came back and say, well, I told my spouse, this is how I feel. And she goes, oh, give a damn what you feel. So it's happened. Either not to say anything and just start changing, see what the changes happen, or to tie in the resentment you're feeling is because they think they've been giving you a lot and you're not getting anything in return. Then we have to talk about, well, I didn't know you were giving and it would be helpful if you said to me, I'd much rather hear what you want than you telling, you know, so we go through that whole thing, but it's just tying in the negatives because they see the negatives and it's just tying it into that behavior and how the partner needing to be more selfish will help get the separation that person needs to take care of themselves and they'll be in a happier, better place to give.
Yeah.
Now, the person who's receiving often talks about, so either someone's invasive, the giver is very invasive and they haven't put up boundaries.
Right, right.
So there's that, or they're just oblivious. So there's a lot of relief on the person as well who's been receiving.
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking another thing that I hear from clients, I mean, so much of the time, what I think of as, you know, the higher desire person, they so want their partner to want to have sex with them.
Yeah.
And so for years, this person's been showing up because I'm not really wanting it, but I'm doing this because I'm supposed to. And then it starts to be such a hollow experience. And so I do remind both of them that the quality of sex is going to go up when it's chosen and wanted and, you know, as opposed to showing up because it's an obligation or a favor or something.
Right. They're always surprised their partner can feel that. But of course they can.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Or are they trying to wow them into something? That's the other part that makes them feel overwhelmed. The receiver can feel overwhelmed. Like, you don't have to go over the top like that.
Yeah.
You have to have a discussion with him or her later about why it's not being received.
Right. Hey, this is Jess. I'm just taking a quick break, and I want to make sure you know about the guide I wrote about how to talk to your partner about sexual concerns. This comes up a lot in my practice. People have struggles, and it takes them so long to bring it up with their partner. They're afraid that that conversation is going to go badly, their partner's going to be upset, the partner's going to be defensive, or they just don't know how to talk about sex and sexual problems. Common problem. So I wrote this guide that really helps you address this. It helps you prepare for the conversation, how to introduce the conversation, and then tips about how to actually get through the conversation so that you can change things with your partner as a team. If you are interested in this guide, you can find it at bettersexpodcast.com/guide. Again, bettersexpodcast.com/guide. Happy to send it to you. So how do you work with people, or what do you suggest if somebody, you know, has really been raised up to not be selfish? Because, you know, I see that all the time with clients. Like they don't even know what they want. They've never thought of themselves in so many different contexts. It's so foreign. And maybe they're open to the concept of this, but how do they start to move in that direction?
Well, this all kind of depends on the personality, but all kinds of ways to either take time to reflect just in your head or journaling. A lot of people really never journaled. I was surprised how many people really like to do that. Carving out time alone maybe for a while before they carve out time with the partner. Just getting comfortable. Some people want it. They will build into their phones little timers to stop and think. Just simply think about, okay, how am I feeling? People who are never angry, for instance, you know, it's like, so to check in with themselves a couple times a day, just to name the feeling, get practice doing that. Because you're right. We'll be in the session. I'll be like, okay, let's think about, instead of talking about your partner, let's talk about you.
Right.
You know, you, they have to, sometimes they'll tell me about something, what the feeling that comes up with that. And we have to stop and really, they can't name it. They just, right. They weren't raised to name their emotions or even talk about emotions or to bury them. So we have, and then literally I have to go through sometimes a list of the emotions to remind them. So as you know, they'll give a lot of thoughts.
Right.
Right, that was bad. I didn't like it. So you have to do a lot of stopping and talking through, and then I get them to do that at home too.
Yeah. Do you ever do, I mean, one thing I find myself doing is I use the example of choosing what's for dinner or what takeout to get is a place for people to practice starting to tune into what they actually want. Like little, you know, little small decisions that couples face every day, you know, that there's so many choices we face every day where we could tune into what do I actually want? I mean, I get it, right? But I should at least figure out what I want and say something about that.
Yeah, there are some people who can't even do what I want for physical things or any other thing. But there's some people who can do it's funny how they can do that so well, but then they can't name an emotion that goes with it.
Yeah.
Maybe one extreme or the other. Either they're all, I don't know what I want. I defer. Or I know exactly what I want for dinner. I know where I want to be in 5 years. I know exactly the office. They'll be at the office telling their staff what they want very clearly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But they can't sit and say, okay, how do I feel how do I feel every night when my wife refuses my sexual advances? They can't.
Yeah. So are there pitfalls for couples, if there's, especially as it applies to their sex life? They've struggled. There's been resentment. There's some avoidance. What they're trying to overcome this. They're starting to really tune into what, you know, each person wants, that selfishness. What kind of bumps in the road are they likely to run into? Are there common kind of like, oh gosh, now this is happening?
The most common one is just like we were talking about earlier, where they say they finally get the courage that they know what they want. They know why they want it. We talk about how to ask for it. and they say it and their partner goes, oh, I've never thought of that. Or gee, that kind of goes against what I want. And then they're like, okay, there we go. You know, they think,
yeah.
Right. And suddenly, woo, that's the end of the world there. I mean, most of the time, the partners were not really, except that one where she was kind of abrasive, but most of the time, they're either surprised, like even could be a pleasant surprise, but it's, yeah, it's felt badly by the person saying it, the person. Again, back to the, I want to just say it and they do it. Where it was, they went, wait a minute, she has a right, or he has a right. I see mostly men, as you can tell by my choice. Oh, no. It's just like you have the right to say what you need. It's time then to listen to what she needs. And that's important to know that too.
Yeah.
And then you have to talk about, well, I want that and you want that. How can we make that work? And that's just that discussion right there is so beautiful and intimate. And I always tell people that then you come up with your own unique formula.
Right, right.
For your sex life or for going to dinner or for parenting. That's your signature as a couple. It makes you different from anybody else.
Yeah. Well, and it reminds me, sometimes people will be like, hey, I finally worked up the courage to tell you what I want. So now you're supposed to, I should just get it, you know? And it's like, well, no, you're still dealing with another person.
And every once in a while, somebody, I mean, is shocking that person, or they want something else. And they're afraid to say, that's the other part. So then they'll say what they want to say. The person that they want to say, and they go, oh, okay. So they go back to that habit.
Oh, right, right. Of just sort of giving in or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anything I forgot to ask you that you can think of or other points you want to share?
No, I just love this topic. And it's such an important and timely topic for really for couples, especially in their fifth year or so. It's when it starts, almost like they start taking for granted their time together and they don't realize how important it is to unpack the bag or something. Unpack this stuff when they can. They're so afraid of having an argument or so afraid of getting more distance between them that they just won't bring up anything negative. So
yeah.
Help any couple to start saying the bad things, realizing that's what makes them good and that's what gets you over them and that's what gets you closer, then that's a positive thing.
Yeah, and especially if you do it sooner rather than let it build up and fester for a decade or something, you know, then it's not likely to come out as constructively as if you brought it up early on. Exactly. Yeah. So where can people find you on the interweb or anything else you'd like them to know about what you've got available?
Relationship-rx.com is my website. And you can always call me, 757-340-8800.
All right, great. Well, thank you so much for being on the show.
Well, thank you so much, Bethel.
You've been listening to Better Sex. Please visit our website, bettersexpodcast.com, for show notes and additional episodes.
And that's a wrap for today. I really hope you enjoyed the episode. If you are enjoying the podcast, if some of this material resonates with you and you would like to make a difference and make sure that this keeps coming out in the world once a week, ongoing, there are a couple things you could do to show your appreciation. The first would be to go to iTunes and rate and review the show. That really helps us be found by new listeners when you review the show on iTunes. You can find a link at bettersexpodcast.com/iTunes. The other thing I want to invite you to consider is becoming a Patreon. For a small monthly pledge, you get some benefits. So for $2 a month, you get advance access to every single episode. For $5 a month, you get a chapter of my upcoming new book. And for $10 a month, I host quarterly get-to-know-you and question-and-answer chats over the web, and you get invited to that. I would love to have your membership in that become part of the Better Sex family. You can find a link at bettersexpodcast.com/Patreon, which is P-A-T-R-E-O-N. Again, thanks for listening. I'm glad you're here. Feel free to comment, ask questions, get in touch. I'd love to hear from listeners. Thanks.